Hi, this is Scott Burton, arts, music, and culture producer at K2. On Friday, I sat down with Juno Symphony resident conductor William Todd Hunt, and we talked about everything from his musical background to what kind of music he listens to on his free time. He also gave us an idea of what to look for in today's performance. Why don't you start by telling us your name and your current positions here in Juno?
Okay, current positions. I like that. My name is William Todd Hunt. I am, well, since we're talking about the symphony right now, I'm the resident conductor of the symphony and the guest conductor for this particular program. I'm also artistic director of Opera to Go, which is, of course, one of the opera companies in Juno. I do lots of other things around town. I work for Perseverance Theater as well and, work some on my own and sort of, other like private instruction and that kind of thing. So lots of odd jobs.
Yeah, sounds like fun.
Yeah.
So I'd like to get back to your current projects later, but I kind of want to get back to your roots. I understand you were born in Louisville, Kentucky.
Right. Louisville. Yeah. So it was actually they have a wonderful orchestra there that's been in some trouble lately. But it was, once I started getting into the classical music, symphonic kind of music. They're really great. They engage with the community very well, and it's really a wonderful orchestra with a great heritage, especially for new music. Interestingly enough, they were one of the first orchestras to do widely distributed recordings of brand new works back in the 50s, even. So it was kind of an exciting place to be in that regard. And a lot of people don't think of Louisville or even Kentucky as a whole as being sort of an arts center, but there's a lot going on there.
Got it. And even before that, what about as a kid and your family? What got you going in the musical realm?
Yeah, well, my first musical studies were forced on me by my parents. Piano lessons, as every kid sort of gets piano lessons, I think, from like age 10 or something around that. And, I just hated it. And I probably did that for a couple, 3 years. And in sixth grade, I actually picked up the saxophone. And when I started middle school, and all of a sudden, I was like, I think I actually like music. This is really great. I remember bringing my brand new saxophone into my piano lesson, and because I just wanted to show my teacher, just like, here it is. And all of a sudden, my lesson was over, and I hadn't played a single note on piano. I was like, wow, that was my best lesson ever. So, needless to say, the piano has always eluded me, and it's been a tough thing that I come back to every once in a while. But it was really the wind instruments that got me really moving in music.
Got it. So moral of the story is the forced music lessons do work out.
They can work out, yeah. And I'm actually very glad, that I had at least that, those few years early on, because, once you get to music school, you're actually forced yet again to take piano if you want to graduate. And so I had to do that for my undergrad as well as my master's and doctoral work even, so...
Got it. So woodwinds, probably into high school and
yeah. I was a saxophone major in undergrad, and in late high school I picked up a bassoon and was playing around with it mostly, and thought I was going to be playing around with it in undergrad, but there was only one other bassoon player at my undergrad, so I kind of got pulled into that and practically forced to play bassoon, and so I ended up basically ending up with an undergrad in woodwinds rather than just saxophone, even though it's that was really my focus. But I played some flute and clarinet there as well, so covered everything but oboe.
Along the way, were there any mentors or teachers?
Oh gosh, yeah, loads of them. Like I to start off with, my first and main saxophone teacher, Lee Patrick, was probably the most instrumental in shaping my musicality and how I think about music and phrasing and just the whole backstory going on in my head while I'm trying to shape music. But when I got to conducting, I've had lots and lots of teachers, and many of them have had a pretty profound influence. Like at my when I went to Indiana University for my master's and doctoral work, there were two main teachers there, Imre Paulo and Thomas Baldner, who really sort of rebuilt my technique from the ground up, and started me on the road to actually making music with conducting, which before I was just, you know, trying to keep people together and was more of a traffic cop. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I did a lot of studies in Europe, and the probably the main teacher for while I was in Europe, I was studying in Amsterdam, was Jorma Panula, who's a Finnish teacher of lots of big names in the business now, like Esa-Pekka Salonen and Osmo Venska, and a few others that, you know, people might know, mostly Finnish folks. But he really sort of reshaped my technique into something that was a lot clearer and cleaner. And I could just go on and on some of these people. Yeah.
Sure, sure. When did you make the choice to become a conductor?
That was probably in very late undergrad. Like I said, I was essentially a saxophone major and a classical saxophone major, which, you know, if you can imagine, it's like, okay, I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to do with my life as a classical saxophone player? Well, that basically means you get a job in university and teach other people to play classical saxophone. And it worked for me for a little while. But yeah, when I started taking some conducting classes in undergrad, I was like, oh, wow, this is really something. And the orchestral music was what really grabbed me initially as a teenager. And so I was always sort of in that sort of area of classical music. And saxophone, there's just not much out there. So I was getting a little bit from bassoon, and my bassoon chops just weren't all that great. I wasn't ever going to be as good as I was on saxophone. So that's sort of where it started to turn over. And that my first conducting teacher, David Harmon, sort of really pushed me in a lot of different directions. I got to do opera for the first time. And, well, Gilbert and Sullivan was at HMS Benefort, was the first show he gave me to do. And that was quite a revelation and really wonderful training for a conductor who's going to end up doing a lot of opera. Because it's got everything that opera has in it on a slightly smaller, easier to grasp scale.
From your biography, it looks like mm-hmm. you started off in the operatic realm and have since moved towards symphonic music.
Yeah, it was more or less simultaneous. I mean, especially in grad school, we alternated days. I mean, we had class every day of the week, and it was literally one day was symphonic work, the next day was opera, the next day was symphonic. And so we got a lot of exposure to both. And I ended up probably being a little bit more on the operatic side. My first wife was an opera director, and we did a lot of things together back in the mid-90s, that sort of mid to late 90s, that era. And it's just been one of the things that really grabs me, you know, because you've got a drama that is, you know, you can put your hands on and wrap your mind around. It's not the abstract that symphonic music tends to be. But, you know, I go back and forth. Like right now, I'm like, I don't want to do an opera. I just want to conduct symphony. It's just a sort of a different mindset. And I have to say, it's really nice. In some ways, it's like a little vacation to do a symphony concert, because you don't have all of the extra musical issues that come up in an opera, like, you know, are the sets going to like stay up? Are the singers going to come out at the right time? Are they going to be acting so much that they're not really with what the orchestra is doing? And so there's so many variables, and it's nice to just focus absolutely on the music and try to get that polished to as close to perfection as we possibly can. So that's actually really nice.
Well, good. From an outsider's perspective, though, mm-hmm. conducting in symphonic situations looks really challenging to me. You're out there in front. You have to keep time, keep everyone coordinated.
Yeah.
What are the challenges with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, in my thinking about it, the first job of a conductor is to make sure everybody is together. And so the way we're waving our arms are actually sometimes a little less so. But what we're trying to do is a beat pattern. You know, each meter has a different set of directions that your hand goes on, depending on what beat it is. And so we try to keep that so that the musicians can look up and go, okay, I know exactly where we are. But then the next step, of course, is to try to make music with it. And I'm talking about performance here. Rehearsal is kind of a different thing. In performance, you want to bring out different parts. You want to shape how phrases work. And that goes beyond what I was talking about earlier about the traffic cop sort of thing. I mean, a traffic cop is good, but you need also someone to shape the music and give it some flow. Because when you've got 60, 70 people on stage, you're really can't rely on everybody having this being of the same mind about how things are going to go. Sometimes it does happen, but that takes a lot of work and a lot of years of playing together and whatnot. So we see some, like the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra, for example, will play without a conductor always. And I've heard them live, and it's astonishing how their style is so precise and together and completely unified, but that takes a lot of work.
Got it. So it sounds like bringing life to the music.
Yeah. And I say in rehearsal, it's completely different because that's actually where I think most of the real work takes place. I mean, when you're watching the concert, that's, you know, it's like we're done rehearsing. This is just making music. And so that's, yeah, I mean, sort of where I really like to be, but also the rehearsal is nice because you get to shape things and to watch it grow. But you have to always have a critical ear and stop everyone and say, okay, you know, this part is a little bit behind, or, you know, this section is a little flat or something, and let's go back and try to fix that. Where in performance, it's if something happens, then you sort of need to let it go. Fix it if you can, move on, forget about it.
Is there a dynamic between you and the players? What is that relationship like, and what are some effective mm-hmm. communication techniques?
Yeah, it varies with different, every conductor sort of has a different way, I think, of thinking about the fine details of that. But basically, I mean, you're where the buck stops. You know, if a decision needs to be made and one isn't happening, then you make it and that's it. There's a lot of dialogue, especially between principal players, like the concertmaster, the principal flute, the principal oboe, everybody who gets a lot of say. And also, I mean, even not worrying about taking everything to me will delegate their ideas out to their section. And, so that's sort of how the command structure works. But if there's something that needs to be unified, then that's where it comes to the conductor. Yep.
All right. So shifting gears a little bit, mm-hmm. is more about you.
Okay.
What do you like to do on your free time here in Juneau?
Oh, my free time. Oh, I get free time? What? What is this? What are you talking about? Well, gosh, you know what I spent my entire summer doing was redoing floors in the house and tiling. And I like to work with my hands a lot. You know, it's like we just bought a house a couple of years ago. I'm pushing 3 years ago, I guess. But one of the big selling points for me is it came with a workshop. And it's like, wow, I have a place for all of my power tools and everything. So I'd like to make things with my hands. I wouldn't say I'm a real craftsman or anything. I certainly tinker around. But yeah, that's probably the biggest thing I like to do is to smell sawdust in the morning. Yeah.
And I was also wondering about what's on your iPod? What kind of music do you listen to?
What kind of music? Yeah. Oh, I hate music. Oh, wait, no, that's not right. What I think of is a pretty wide range of things, which other people might think is very narrow. But I do listen to a lot of classical. But if I'm not in the mood for that, I tend towards classic rock, like Led Zeppelin, Cream, that kind of era Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin's one of my favorite singers, even though all the opera people are going, oh, no.
Yeah. Great. So here we are right now. We're in the middle of the show playing this interview. Right. How do you hope the first half would have gone, and what should we be looking forward to in the next half?
Yeah, well, the first half of the Boris Godunov excerpts, really wonderful pieces that I hope the audience can connect with. I mean, some people that go to the symphony, I think, don't particularly like opera, maybe don't think they like opera. But these pieces, in some ways, I think are a perfect pairing for the Tchaikovsky, because there's so many similarities, yet it's completely different music. So it's really nice to set these two apart. So one of the things I hope is not so much as to how the first half has been received, but how the whole concert is perceived by the audience, and to get that contrast with the similarities. It's just sort of where the whole idea of the concert program came from was, it all came from the one thing that was going to happen on this concert that we knew about was David Miller was going to be singing. And so it's like, okay, well, we have to find something that will work well with him. And I thought that the roles in Boris Godunov are absolutely perfect. Where I was like, okay, well, let's come up with a little suite of arias from Boris Godunov, and yeah, Tchaikovsky 5, that would be perfect. And these two composers were born like around a year apart and in roughly the same part of the world. So it is, yeah, interesting, but they come from very different backgrounds as far as their musical training, especially, but they're a lot of their ideas too. So,
all right. Last question, I think. What's the future hold for you?
Ooh, the future, the crystal ball time. Yeah, I have no idea. Well, if there's as a conductor, we're always looking out for the next job, the next opportunity to do things. The immediate future, I'd have got a conducting masterclass I'm doing at the beginning of next month in November. Here in Juneau. Also, the Amalga Chamber Orchestra is going to do a concert in late November. And after that, we've got, with the Opera to Go, there's the world premiere of Rory Stitt's opera, Bennu's Birds, which is really sort of driving all of my focus right now. And it's hard to even think about next season, but I've got to start planning that rather soon. But yeah, and as far as the distant future goes, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. The symphony is going to start looking for a new music director, and I'm certainly throwing my name in the hat for that. And I'm always looking out for other jobs, around. And yeah, I just want to get out there and conduct as much as I can.
I want to thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's been great. And I hope everybody's enjoying the concert.
Yeah,
I'm sure I am too.
Good luck in the second half.
Oh, thanks.